Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Today on Stick to Football, it's Tuesday. That means $100 handshakes. That means top five Tuesdays. And also the return of some draft on draft. We've missed it. We know you've missed it. I have Mello. I have Connor. And boys, we have another job opening in the NFL late Sunday night. Dan Quinn and our friend Thomas Dimitroff fired by the Atlanta Falcons. Raheem Morris named the interim head coach. So already in the NFL, we have the Texans with a head coach and general manager opening, and now the Falcons with a head coach and general manager opening. Two teams with, like, not bad rosters. The Falcons have cap hell, but both of these teams have a quarterback, Mello, and that's usually what we see is like, you got to start over. You got to rebuild. These teams have quarterbacks.
Yeah, I think they have, you know, some talent on the offensive side of the ball too. Like, and even in Houston, you have your left tackle, you have your quarterback, you've got some pass rushers. There's a lot to be excited about if you're Houston, and hopefully that can bring in a good coaching candidate, much like I think we're going to see in Atlanta. I think that that is probably now the most exciting coaching vacancy because you do have Matt Ryan, and you don't have to rebuild right now. If you can bring in a GM and ownership's on board, you can still make a push for a Super Bowl. You don't see that very often with job openings. Usually when the coach gets fired, it's complete rebuild, especially when the GM goes with him. But I think that Atlanta roster is still something to be very excited about, and maybe not something you want to blow up just yet.
I think so, too. On the offensive side of the ball, you obviously have Matt Ryan, who he might be getting up there, but he's still a high-level quarterback. They have a lot of talent at wide receiver. They've added talent across this entire offense over the years, where it's really one of those things. It's going to be interesting, right? Like, I like that they moved on from the coach and GM together. As much as we're big fans of Dimitroff, it was great when he was on this show. I mean, the guy had a 12-year run in one place as the GM. Not a lot of people can say that. It's just, it was time to do this together, right? Now you go in, you're going to hire a head coach and GM tandem, and they could do things how they want. Now there's a lot of options with this team, right? We don't know how bad they're going to finish. I know right now you could sit there and go, well, they're picking top three. They're going to get their quarterback of the future. I still don't think this team is bad enough where they'll be picking top three. I think they'll pull out a couple wins here. Maybe they do pick like two or three, but to think they'll get Trevor Lawrence, that would still surprise me. Where maybe you go into this offseason and you say, hey, we're going to retool this defense. You know, maybe we're going to add a piece to this offensive line, but we're going to give this thing another run with Matt Ryan, Julio Jones. You know, you have a really good youngster in Calvin Ridley. So I'm fascinated to watch where this goes. But I think the overall theme here is, guys, they're going to have hiring power, which is something that not a lot of teams can say. You know, we're going to talk about the Jets looking for a coach and GM. We don't feel great about their hiring power at the moment. Even the Texans, that roster and the lack of draft capital will hurt them in their chances of who they hire. But you can't say that about the Falcons. They can go dream big. Maybe they interview an Ed Dodds for GM. Maybe they go after a Brian Daboll or somebody like that at head coach. I'm excited to watch how this one plays out.
Yeah, same. And Rich McKay is running the team. He has been an NFL general manager before. He's very, very well connected. So, like, if you – and we'll do this, you know, when all the jobs are open. But, like, when you power rank the jobs that are going to be open, I can't imagine anyone being more attractive than the Falcons. Because, like, yes, the salary cap is a mess. You can fix that. Like, I mean, a good example, John Dorsey killed the Chiefs' salary cap. And now, like, they're giving everyone, you know, tons and tons of money. So you can clean up the cap. That is a concern with the Falcons. But there is talent here. Like, this team is not that far removed from being up in a Super Bowl. They're not that far removed from being a dominant team in the NFC. So I think the Falcons are going to have a lot of options, whether that's Eric Bieniemy or Brian Daboll, or I think it'll probably be an offensive coach, just because they Dan Quinn was a defensive coach. Those things seem to be pretty cyclical. So we'll see. The rumor mill this year is going to start early with coaching hires and interviews. Something I wrote about last week, like, no, you can't hire a coach right now, but you can sure as shit like prioritize. You can be where, like, hey, we want to be Eric Bieniemy's first interview when the season's over, and you're probably like talking to his agent, doing some backroom type stuff. You want to make sure we're the first interview. It's something that happened with Kyle Shanahan when the 49ers wanted Kyle Shanahan. You know, he couldn't take that job until after the Super Bowl, but it was like they had locked that up really early that was going to happen. So you can do that as well. It's maybe not the most up and up thing that happens in the NFL, but you can definitely get that lined up. Let's talk some players though, guys. Chase Claypool went off, and this is so fun because I can remember being in the booth together at the Senior Bowl and watching him move and stuff and just be like, man, he looks better than he did on tape. And then you see what he does at the combine and you're like, oh my God, this is rare. He almost looks like Calvin Johnson out there moving. And it's now translating to the field. 4 touchdowns yesterday. And the Steelers, like, they are good at evaluating receivers. They're good at developing wide receivers. And Big Ben is apparently really, really good at building that chemistry with his receivers, because Chase Claypool has become the guy there. Even with Juju Smith-Schuster, even with Deontay Johnson, Juju's a free agent after this year, guys. I think by the end of the year, we'll see Chase Claypool be wide receiver one there, if he's not already. 3 receiving touchdowns yesterday, 1 rushing, and he was unstoppable. Not that the Philly defense is good, it's not, but he was unstoppable.
And that's one thing that I'm kind of curious about, too. When you look at that receiver room, obviously Claypool is a good emerging receiver, had a great game yesterday. But like with James Washington there, with Deontay Johnson there, I wonder if they do bring Juju back. Not that he's a bad receiver. I think he's still a great receiver, probably still receiver one right now. But I wonder if you have to pay him, or if you can say, we're going to use some of this money and we're going to make sure our left tackle stays around, or we're going to replace an edge rusher or whatever they have. I think their corners are up. There's some holes that are going to come open. Receiver's not one of them. So I do wonder if we see Juju hang around, if that's something that both sides want. I think that, as far as Smith-Schuster goes, he's talked about Big Ben being his guy, maybe bringing in Sam Darnold to go with him. But they definitely have a plethora of receivers and have room where they don't have to spend money at that position. And for Chase Claypool especially, like, I love this kid. Like, the first thing that caught my eye about him when we got to the Senior Bowl is Big Country and I walked down to the field, and he was blocking. And Big Country even asked me, he said, oh, is that the big tight end from Notre Dame that everyone's talking about? I said, no, that's the receiver from Notre Dame who's blocking. He was like, Jesus Christ, that guy's big. Yes, he is. And he can block. He can do a little bit of everything. We thought he might even play some tight end. I think that he's just an ultimate weapon for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And hopefully he continues to see more and more production.
He really is. He's massive. I mean, you talk about those Senior Bowl drills, Mello. That's one of the only times that I was standing right near the pylon and they were just throwing fades. And it's one of those times where you keep your eyes open to move back, because if that guy runs into you, I mean, you're going down, and you're going down with an injury. I mean, he's just huge. A true 6'5", muscled up frame. He's bigger than every DB. He runs well for his size. He tracks the ball. He's got good hands. I mean, and for the Steelers, how many times have we seen this before? It goes back to your Juju conversation. Sure, I'm not saying Juju's out the door, but the Steelers are not afraid to let wide receivers walk or move wide receivers. They always know when they feel it's time. Now, are you going to bet the house on Claypool and Deontay Johnson next year? And maybe you add somebody if you did let Juju walk, right? This is another really good wide receiver draft. You could draft another guy. But I think when you look at it right now, if Claypool is going to be this much of a dominant player, it's at least going to be a conversation, because the Steelers are a team that will pay their offensive linemen. They'll pay a very, very talented defense. I mean, they got playmakers on all 3 levels of this defense. We saw them go out and give Cam Hayward a much earned contract extension before the season. So It's fascinating. It wouldn't shock me if they're just not looking to pay him. And maybe there is even a trade that they can work out, maybe a tag and trade scenario. But for the Steelers, this is not a conversation that you should be upset about if you're a fan. It's one you should be happy about because, I mean, I was a big fan of that pick. But when I look at it, I didn't think the instant impact would play out like this. I thought maybe second half of the season, maybe somebody gets hurt. But he's come in, and when he's gotten opportunities, he's produced.
No, he absolutely has. And it's fun to see that connection, to see where it's growing. And the Steelers, I mean, they're rolling. It's weird because this season has been so bizarre that it's almost like at times we forget to talk about which teams are just like really good. Like Seattle's 5-0. You know, Pittsburgh is just no one can stop them right now. You know, the 4-0 start, defense looks really, really good. And it's like so much of the AFC, it's about Baltimore and Kansas City. And it's like, wait a second, like Pittsburgh's actually winning the AFC North right now. Like they are leading a really good division.
Yeah, and even like you talk about the dominating teams. I caught on Sunday night that the Seahawks are 5-0 for like the first time in, I think, franchise history. Like, are you kidding me? This is the first time Russ has done that, but it's going to be a scary start. And then you look at the AFC North, even like you said, the Browns are for real, guys. Like, I don't know. That's not in our rundown. Maybe it should be because they're sitting there at 4-1. They play the Steelers next week. That's going to be one hell of a football game.
I had that. It's coming in the show, promise. They're good. They're for real. And then the Ravens, like, oh yeah, only in the Ravens, you know, who are also like 4-1 or whatever. How about some unfortunate news before we get to $100 handshakes? Sunday night football, late afternoon Sunday football. It felt like Sunday night. Dak Prescott running and a terrible ankle injury. I was actually, I had my back to the TV when it happened. I was helping my son do something and I heard Tony Romo be like, oh no, like, oh God, like this is bad. And I'm like, what? Did the channel change? Like what is happening back there? Uh-huh. So I turn around and in time to see the replay. And it's heartbreaking, you know? And it's one of those like Willis McGahee or Jalen Smith where Alex Smith. It's like, it's just going to be like burned into your memory forever. You know, that injury, unfortunately. So number one, Dak had surgery last night. I know we all are huge fans of his. Hopefully he is back sooner than later. Hopefully this is something that he can overcome. It's so terrible that this happens to a guy who's playing on a franchise contract. And yes, he's making a lot of money this year, but $31 million is a lot less than $500 million or $400 million.
Or even like the $150 or whatever that Deshaun Watson got.
Right. So it's unfortunate on a lot of fronts. The Cowboys have Andy Dalton. They did win yesterday. But gosh, it sucks for Dak, who's one of the really good guys in football.
It really does. And we've been looking and, you know, we've been talking about this Dak Prescott situation all summer long. And when are the Cowboys going to pay him? Why haven't they paid him? I think this injury is going to make it difficult for both sides. And, you know, looking at it for like Andy Dalton, I bet he just comes out and balls out, and we probably see him like as a starter again in the NFL next year. Like throwing to these receivers, having Zeke Elliott at running back, I think that he can do enough probably to get the Cowboys a couple more wins, probably still win the NFC East, and then maybe go to a different team and be a starter next year.
This almost made me angry, right? When you're watching it, you're just like, man, you know, for all the people that were upset that a deal didn't get done, if there were people upset towards the Dak side, it's just one of those things where you're like, man, like you applaud Dak at the time for betting on himself. And I'm not, no one could sit here today and be like, oh, he made the wrong decision, right? Because he got hurt. Because if you know anything about Dak Prescott and the crazy life he's had, he's going to bounce back from this and be himself again. It's just going to take a while. It's just one of those frustrating things where you're like, man, you know, the guy deserved to get paid. The guy does everything the right way. There's an underdog story in all of this with him. And it's just very frustrating. I know it's part of football, but it's one of those things that leaves such a bad taste in your mouth. And you could see it on the field. Like Jason Garrett in Giants gear running over to check on his former quarterback. You know what I mean? You could see every single guy going up to Dak before the cart pulls away and how much respect he has gained for, you know, one of the most prominent franchises in the NFL. So I mean, when you talk about the next steps in all this, it is fascinating, right? Like, what happens in all of this? Is there... Now, Dak isn't a guy that has, you know, ill will towards anyone. You get those vibes where he'll be like, oh, now I'm going to leave. But it makes you wonder, how much more complicated did this make things? The chances of them finding middle ground on a deal now seem impossible in my eyes, unless the Cowboys side really, really is comfortable and starts to pony up, which they haven't shown to fully do yet. I think you just look at this and it's like you assume that Dak will probably play on another tag next year. Hopefully he comes back healthy. I saw Bryce Hall tweet out that it was the same injury he had and he's still working his way back on the field. And I think that was at least a year ago now when he suffered that injury at Virginia and now he's with the Jets. So it's a significant injury and hoping the best for Dak and know he's going to come back just fine from this, but it's going to take a while.
Yeah, it is, man. It sucks to see. Like, you never, like, injuries suck. It's the worst part of football. And hopefully he gets back on the field quickly. All right, let's do some $100 handshakes, guys. I got to give Najee Harris a gigantic one in a game that became a shootout against Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss. Alabama wins 63-48, but it's because Najee Harris scored 5 touchdowns, 23 rushes, 206 yards. 5 touchdowns, he gets a $100 handshake and an ice bath because, my God, does Nick Saban love to run his power backs, and Najee Harris is another one.
And I was rewatching this game last night, too, and my $100 handshake's going to it as well. Najee Harris could have had like 7 or 8 touchdowns. They gave one goal line carry to Brian Robinson,
yep,
and it went there. Najee had another goal line stance where he had a fumble on the goal line. Like, he easily could have had 7 or 8 touchdowns in this game. And the crazy thing is that Alabama needed every single one of those touchdowns to fight against Ole Miss. My $100 handshake is going to Ole Miss quarterback Matt Corral, a young kid. He's a sophomore, might be a redshirt guy, but this is a guy to watch. This is like the Mississippi Manziel. When you watch him play, number 2, running around out there, little guy, crazy strong arm, but he threw for 365 yards and 2 touchdowns against Alabama. Now, this is one hell of a defense, and he was able to still carve him up. Finding different targets, hit the tight end for 181 yards. Elijah Moore had a great day as well, but he gets my $100 handshake. It's not easy to play in Tuscaloosa and put up numbers like that, and he did it as a sophomore.
I love that pick, Melo. Corral has quietly had such an awesome year as a redshirt sophomore, nonetheless, and doing it with his legs, doing it with a really strong arm. I think he's somebody we're going to be talking about a lot going into next year in the SEC and as one of these up-and-coming quarterbacks, star quarterbacks. All right, guys, sorry, I hate to do this to you, but the first one for me is Creed Humphrey from Oklahoma. You know, you look at what this guy has done for a couple years now for that program, specifically in the ground game on the interior of the offensive line. Just a super impressive player, really strong drive blocker, and you don't get to say this every year, but right now, he looks like a first-round center, or at least a top 50 kind of pick. I mean, all the tape is there. Even if he didn't play this year, it was almost a surprise that he went back to school. But the big uglies don't get a lot of $100 bills, so Creed Humphrey stepped right up.
No, he deserves it. He had a hell of a game. Not even upset about it. He was good.
Creed Humphreys looks like the nicest guy in the world. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen him, like, jogging off to the sideline, or Google him without his helmet on.
He's jolly.
Yeah, he just looks like he would be the nicest guy in the world that would never do anything disrespectful. And then, like, he just mauls people on the field.
Yeah, no, he's good. And I'm actually going to take a shot at my own team as well, because they deserve it. I'm going to go Isaiah Thomas, defensive lineman from Oklahoma. This dude was everywhere. Number 95. If you go back and watch the game film on the Red River Shootout, Isaiah Thomas probably deserved the game ball. Like, I know everybody's going to, you know, like, oh, Spencer Rattler. Spencer Rattler got benched, kind of played like shit. Isaiah Thomas, though, absolutely amazing. Like, I cannot wait to go back and watch the Iowa State game now, because this was an opportunity where I had not, he hadn't popped for me yet. You know, I hadn't watched a lot of Oklahoma games. I hadn't watched, I don't think, any real time. And so watching him play is like, man, like, this, the Texas interior offensive line is not that bad. And he was absolutely killing them. So hell of a day for him as a redshirt junior. He's definitely someone that is now firmly on my draft radar. I even like the body type. Like, he's kind of lean, and athletically, he might end up being one of those like five tech, you know, kind of tweener guys. But my goodness, he was everywhere for the Sooners.
I just want to know how many Isaiah Thomases are there in this world? Because I know at least three. And so good for him getting his $100 handshake. I'm going to keep things on the defensive side of the ball because I feel like last week I went offensive heavy. I'm going to those Georgia Bulldogs and their veteran linebacker, Monty Rice. This guy was all over the field for against Tennessee, 8 tackles, 2 for a loss, had a sack, also recovered a fumble for a touchdown. This defense, I know that you look at the box score and it says 44-21 and you think, oh my God, the offense was so good for Georgia. The defense kept putting them in great positions, even getting themselves a touchdown. So my first $100 handshake from this game is going to linebacker Monty Rice. Watch for him. I think that he should be a senior bowl guy, kind of undersized, but I think that we've proven over the last couple drafts that doesn't matter anymore. You can be 6 foot, 6 foot one, and that is perfectly okay in the NFL.
The next one for me, a name you're probably getting sick of hearing me talk about at this point, but Terrace Marshall Jr. from LSU. Now, LSU is not the LSU of last year. They are unfortunately a very unimpressive football team, specifically on the defensive side of the ball, but offensively, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about, can this team recover from losing Justin Jefferson, who's a first-round pick? Can they recover after the fact that Ja'Marr Chase opts out? Terrace Marshall Jr. is saying, hey, give me all of these targets. I think he only had about 43 catches last year playing behind those two. He goes out, I think he went for, you know, 11 catches, well over 200 yards, 3 touchdowns. I mean, the guy is a touchdown machine. He's already getting near double-digit touchdowns. He had double-digit touchdowns last year. You're looking for a receiver that did not get, you know, maybe there wasn't enough film out there. Matt, I know you said at LSU they were very excited internally for this guy. He's showing up and showing out and possibly showing his way into the end of round one with how good he's been this early.
Yeah, no, he's been very good. And even when Ja'Marr Chase opted out, I hit up one of the coaches. It was like, how those receivers? He's like, oh, they're good. Like, we're going to be okay. They're not because they're losing a lot, but like Terrace Marshall is definitely doing his part.
Ain't the offense.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of LSU, I got to do it. Mizzou's freshman quarterback, Connor Bazelak, my man went off against LSU. 4 touchdowns, 406 yards. He completed 85% of his passes. LSU could not stop him in another loss for the Tigers. Mizzou gets their first win of the year. 45-41, and it's a freshman quarterback getting it done.
Yeah, and they had a TCU transfer that I thought was going to play a lot this year, and I don't even know if he got any action on the field Saturday night. My last $100 handshake, I'm going to stick with the Georgia defense, fellas. They're just too good. And what they did, you know, I believe Connor and I came on Stick to Football last week and we were talking about, God, this Tennessee offensive line, these are so good. They might be one of the best offensive lines in the country. Cade Mays, Trey Smith. And then Georgia showed up and was like, we don't give a fuck. We're going to run right over you guys, through you, around you. And one of those guys doing it was edge rusher Azeez Ojulari. He's a redshirt sophomore, number 13, getting it done. The 2 sacks that he had against Tennessee. Like I said, I still think this Tennessee offensive line is good. The Georgia defense is just better. And I expected a very close game with Tennessee and Georgia, and it just wasn't. And it was largely because the 2 linebackers at Georgia, Monty Rice and Ojulari. So watch out for them. Fellas, this weekend they play Alabama. And I am very excited for that game.
Already?
Already.
I would say sneaky.
Holy shit.
Wow. That's pretty good action. And I know all of us were saying last week, like, hey, Georgia win, but Tennessee keeps it close. Georgia win, Tennessee keeps it close. That one got away from them. And how many years are we going to talk about this Georgia front 7? I mean, good Lord, it's every single year. They got multiple guys that have NFL futures. So super impressive, especially when you get 2 guys in that group from the $100 handshakes. My last one here, a game that went a little under the radar, and it was not a good game in the first and fourth quarter. It was only really good in the middle, but UNC and Virginia Tech. I thought Tech would upset UNC, and they certainly did not. This turned into kind of a blowout at the end of the game after a great comeback. But Sam Howell from UNC is just in control here, guys. And I think the only thing people had complaints about coming into this game is, you know, can he push the ball down the field a little bit more? And he started to do that. This offense was explosive. this is a really good football team. This was quietly a pretty interesting prospect game. You have Christian Darrisaw, the offensive lineman for Virginia Tech, mm-hmm. who's playing very well, getting some buzz all of a sudden. And, of course, you have Chaz Surratt. There's just players across the board. But Sam Howell is the guy that, you know, we talk about him because us three, you know, are college football fans. But, you know, obviously, if you're just in on the draft, you haven't heard a lot about him. But he just balls out week in and week out.
Yeah, no, he definitely, there's a lot of prospects on that one. But Sam Howell is, that's my guy. Them winning almost made up for the fact that Texas lost. Like, almost.
I mean, what a rebuild.
Oh, yeah. And we're going to talk about that more. Yep. So let's take a break. When we come back, we'll get to that. It's Tuesday. No, LeBron, it's not taco time. It's Top 5 Tuesday time. Mello, also The Bachelorette comes back tonight. I know you're excited. I know I'm excited.
No, I just want tacos and watch The Bachelor.
That's probably what
I'm pretty doing. Basic. Give right? me some chips and salsa, some tacos, The Bachelor.
I'll a friend set. Of mine made me homemade salsa, and I have that. And then I've been hoarding restaurant chips every time I order Mexican food. It's like my setup tonight, because we're recording Monday. Tomorrow night is going to be amazing. Okay, let's get into this. Top 5 Tuesdays. Number one, the Falcons' job will be the most coveted. I know we talked about this at the top, guys, but I cannot see another firing happen that will make the Falcons' job the number two spot. Like, I mean, the Jets are going to make some moves. Sorry, that's not going to be it. Like, I don't see any team making that move to where you're like, that job's better. Like, even if the Vikings fired Mike Zimmer, I might take the Falcons' job over the Vikings' job. Like, it would be close. Like, that's a conversation at least, but that Falcons job, I mean, it's better than the Texans job. And I love Deshaun Watson. It's better. You have draft picks. You have players who are good. You have Julio fucking Jones. Like, you have good players. So I think Falcons job, that's my top takeaway for the week. It is the best job that will be open.
Yeah, if I'm like an Eric Bieniemy or a Daboll, I might just say, like, hey, let's maybe not play Julio the rest of the year. Like, I'll interview for your head coaching job, but you got to promise me that Julio's going to come back next year, be healthy. So let's just redshirt him this year and don't put him back out there. My first big takeaway, fellas, is that the Big 12 should be forced to dissolve. This is a dumpster fire of a conference. Put Oklahoma and Texas in the Pac-12 if you want. Let the Iowa States and the K-States of the world go join the Big Ten. It's just, they're not worthy of being in a championship. They're not worthy of being in the college football playoff. And I have a feeling that somehow Oklahoma State or Iowa State is still going to force their way in. But after just watching this weekend and seeing what's gone down and looking at the standings and watching all the games that have been played, this is a dumpster fire of a conference. And yes, my favorite team plays in it.
That's great. I mean, they really just pick each other apart. They do the Pac-12 thing now where it's just like, what's the point at this point? Because they're all just going to, there's going to be upsets. They're all going to finish with two losses. It's very frustrating, but another dumpster fire. The pick for the race for the first overall pick here, guys. Wow, is this pathetic. I mean, usually you have teams that, like, you look at and you're like, okay, they'll, you know, maybe a 3-win team will pick number one, maybe a 2-win team. I mean, this year you're looking at it, these teams are awful. Like, they could all easily go 1-15, 0-16. It's laughable right now. The Jets have a minus 86 point differential in five games. God. That is over 17 points per game that they're not competing. You could make so much money off the Jets every week. The spreads are always like 6.5, 7 points. I usually buy it up. Like, when the Jets played the Colts, I think I picked the Colts to win by 15 and they won by 29. That's how much money you can make off the Jets right now. But it's not just the Jets. The Washington football team, minus 53. The New York Giants, minus 52. The Falcons, minus 39. Like, there are some very, very bad football teams this year. And I don't see how any of them are going to get much better. So the race for the number one pick, in my eyes, I'm sure a lot of people are like, wow, this sucks. This is bad football. In our eyes, we just call this the draft season and are enjoying watching it.
It's just starting earlier this year.
Yeah, it's just, they're terrible.
Right. It's like, it's time to talk about the Jets. Time to talk about the Falcons. Time to talk about the Texans.
The Giants are awful.
I was going to say, I would not be surprised if both New York teams, the Jets and the Giants, both went defeated this year.
It's just, could you imagine 0-32 New York football?
I mean, it's 0-10
while
already.
The Bills are just up there dominating.
Yep. It's what a weird world.
It's like all those fans who talk shit about Josh Allen for years now would like give their left nut to have him. You know, it's like, come on, man. Okay, my number two one is, and sorry, I don't need an Ian Rappaport type suspension for saying give a left nut. It's a saying.
Oh, man.
I'm not trying to get suspended, okay?
2 weeks.
Right? For a Manscaped commercial, which we've done. Didn't get to.
I mean, remember the Blue Chew commercials?
Exactly. That's right? The one,
like,
I was trying to
Like Double Chub and...
Right. Yeah. Like, good Lord. Of all the shit the NFL has to worry about, Ian Rappaport doing an Instagram video about shaving his balls is what gets somebody suspended. He got suspended longer than Ray Rice did initially. Think about that.
Free rap.
Right? Like, Josh Brown locked his wife in a bathroom and abused her, and he got one game. Ian Rappaport gets two for tweeting about shaving his nuts.
Perspective.
It's amazing. I'm not tweeting that. Just
Schefter is sleeping so well these next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't even need to give you the fucking fantasy injury reports at midnight after college football on Saturday anymore. I'll sleep my ass in till 10 o'clock and tweet them all out because there's no one else out there to compete with me.
You know what? That's my number two takeaway, actually. I'm going off script. It's just ridiculous. It's so ridiculous. Like, come on. People shave. People groom. Like, why is this offensive?
They should be.
They should. Yeah, if you're not, look into it. Like,
good for you, Ian Rappaport.
Right. I don't understand.
He said that he didn't get it approved. So does that mean, like, almost everything that goes through his social media needs to be approved?
I think so.
Could you imagine if us three had to do that?
I would never be able to tweet.
No.
Like, we'd last 4 hours at most.
I know. So that is weird. I was talking to someone, maybe it was you, Mello. It was like, so do they own his social channels? Like, right. Why can
no,
he not?
No, you can't.
Like, why can't you put whatever you want on there?
Because they probably create a policy. Good they can't Lord. Own and operate your social media channels, but if you sign a contract with them and you have to follow their policy, which must be insane. Insane.
Well, something none of us have to worry about. So thank you, Bleacher Report, for that. This segment may actually get us all in trouble, but I'm okay with it.
Well, my second big takeaway is that early in this season, or coming into the season, a lot of people were excited about Mike Leach joining the SEC, wanting to know what that air raid offense was going to look like. And then he beats LSU in the first game of the season, and everybody's like, oh my God, Mike Leach is a genius. This is going to be perfect. My big takeaway from this weekend, both those teams are actually just really bad. And one of them beat the other. But, fellas, I don't know if you saw this weekend. Mississippi State put up 2 points on a safety against Kentucky. This team found a way to beat LSU, and you can't score at all against Kentucky. I think there was a lot of overrating of guys like KJ Costello of the Mississippi State Bulldogs, and even the LSU Tigers, too. Yeah, because they've lost to Mississippi State and Mizzou already. And I think this is going to be a big learning experience from Coach O and this roster. How many guys are you going to keep around next year? Is Derek Stingley going to come back? He's a true sophomore. I know. You don't have to tell me. Is he going to play in his junior year? Because now I think we do have a precedent of guys sitting out and it being okay. You're probably still going to get drafted. But a long road ahead for both of these schools that had high hopes just like 3-4 weeks ago.
Number two here for me, and I can't get enough of this. Everyone is so mad about the Bears right now. Every time I log on Twitter, somebody's going, the Bears are the worst 4-win football team I've ever seen, the worst 4-1 team to ever exist. Everybody is so angry that the Bears keep winning. And listen, I might agree with you that I don't think they're necessarily a great football team, but I'm kind of sitting here wondering, when are we going to get to the point that the Bears are like 10-3 and everybody still thinks that they absolutely right. stink? It doesn't matter how you win. And we've seen Nick Foles just pull this bullshit before, where if the defense is good enough, he stinks it up in the first quarter or the second quarter, makes key throws in the second half, and they keep winning. I mean, I know on this podcast, we had some high hopes for the Bucs this year, and the Bears just went out and beat them. So,
yep.
I don't know. I'm just really enjoying how upset this has made everybody. And a big part of me hopes the Bears just keep winning for reasons we cannot explain.
Oh, I love it. Like, I love chaos. And I even tweeted Friday morning. It was like, it's Friday, like October 9th, and I was wrong about the Bears. It's okay. It's fun. Like, I like watching them play, and I don't even think they're playing their best ball yet. So to people who are like, oh, worst 4-1 team ever, they're still 4-1. Like, so it doesn't matter how good anyone thinks you are, you're still 4-1. So just keep going. Number three on my list, guys, Kyren Williams is legit. And we have not talked a lot about Notre Dame because they just haven't really played anyone yet. I guess you can call Florida State someone. I don't necessarily subscribe to that theory.
What you think it is?
But my God, does he continue to go off. 185 yards against the Seminoles. And he's one of my favorite players to watch. I love short running backs who are just like little bowling balls. And that's him. He reminds me of Kareem Hunt out there. But like not getting in trouble. Big Kyren Williams fan. I think he's only a sophomore. I don't know because Notre Dame's
He's either a sophomore or a redshirt freshman.
Okay, so he's not draft eligible yet. So just enjoy him for another year and a half. Because every Saturday I catch myself watching Notre Dame games because of him. Not Ian Book, it's Kyren Williams.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Please put the Ian Book bed away. It's not good. My third takeaway is that Dak Prescott, we talked about the injury early on in the show. Fellas, I don't know if he should even resign with the Cowboys. After playing this year on a franchise tag, and I know like betting on yourself, it sounds great, but I wonder how this is going to affect the offseason. Is he going to say, yeah, I'll play on another franchise tag? I don't think he will. Not after this injury. And I don't know if he'll even say, yes, I will come back and play for the Cowboys. I think there's at least an out for him to say, you know what? You had your chance to make it right with me and for me to sign a deal here and come back. I wouldn't be surprised if Dak Prescott goes through this process and says, you know what? Probably just best for us to part ways. Ownership doesn't value me. Didn't want to give me the contract. I'll go get it somewhere else and we'll start building the team there. And if he does that, Cowboys are screwed. Like, they've got some offensive pieces that are good, but you can't win in this league without a quarterback.
I mean, if this guy ever gets to the open market, there will be a team out there that'll line up and offer him $50 million a year. I'll say that right now.
Could it be my team?
I mean, why not, right? You look at it. He's just a sure thing. And I know the injury now changes that aspect. You're going to worry about that comeback. But as a player at the most important position in sports, I mean, there will be a team. Look at what Kirk Cousins ended up doing on the open market. With Dak, it would be amplified. So, all right, my third one here, guys. Robbie Anderson is a top 10 wide receiver in the NFL right now. I mean, you look at what him and Teddy Bridgewater are doing there. That Carolina team has really, really turned it on. But I think coming into the year, understandably, all the conversation at wide receiver was around DJ Moore as the number one, Christian McCaffrey probably as the number two, while also playing running back. I mean, through five games, Robbie Anderson, 36 catches, almost 500 yards, and a touchdown already. And I don't believe during his Jets career, he never got to 1,000 yards. And through five games, he already has 500. So you look at how good he's been. It's exciting to see what Joe Brady and that Carolina offense is doing and how they're using players with speed, because everybody on that offense runs a 4-3, and they're just maximizing that. And good for Teddy for ending up in a landing spot that is really maximizing what he can do, his accuracy, his pocket presence. They might not be the best team in football, but they are one of the teams I enjoy watching the most with Matt Rhule's Panthers this year.
They have gone 3-0 without Christian McCaffrey. Like, a first-time NFL head coach, a first-time NFL offensive coordinator, and they have gone 3-0 without one of the best players in football. Like, that is crazy to me how well they are playing. And it's like, I saw people tweeting on Sunday. It was like, oh, man, look at all these teams that suck that could have had Matt Rhule. And, like, it just has to be so bittersweet because, like, this is, it works. Like, what he's doing absolutely works. Wearing a smock, apparently. That's the trick. Number four for me, I did want to talk shit about Jimmy Garoppolo, but I'm probably going to save that. So, instead, I'm going to talk about Mac Brown and how much I miss him. We were not doing this podcast, obviously, when Mac Brown was fired from Texas, but I was all about it. I was done. I was ready. It was time to move on. I was like, Mac Brown needs to go. This old man can't coach anymore. All he does is recruit off of rankings. Mac, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. Please come back. That's where I'm at right now. Come back as AD / head football coach or CEO of Texas football, whatever it needs to be. I don't want to say I'm out on Tom Herman, but I'm like real close to being out on Tom Herman. And I miss Mac Brown. And it just goes to show, like, no, Texas is not back. Like, please just stop saying that. They were good for like 3 years. Let's not say they're back. I think it goes to show how hard a place like Texas is to win at, though, because expectations are uncontrollable. Like, you're expected to be Alabama when the reality is you're Michigan, you know? And so, like, Mac Brown, though, I didn't appreciate you when I had you, and I'm sorry. Please come back.
I'm just happy for him now. Like, North Carolina did the right thing, and they're like, hey, we'll take you back. No problem. I know that you left here for Texas. So, Matt, maybe he'll leave North Carolina for Texas again. He's getting a little up there, though. But I appreciate Mac Brown for everything he did for Texas and what he's doing in North Carolina now. That's a top 10 ranked program, so good for them. Fellas, Tuesday morning, as people are listening to this, I want to put my hat out there and say, we need two Monday night football games. We were supposed to this week, and they canceled one of them. I was very excited to learn that I was going to be able to go home at 4 o'clock Central on Monday night and start watching football. I think it's something that the NFL should actually toy with. I know week one, I probably was on here saying that I absolutely hated it, but when you're starting one game at 4 and the other one at 7, that's ideal. You can't start them at like 6 and 9. That's not working for anybody. But when you do have that 4 o'clock kickoff, it makes Monday a little bit nice. And the Tuesday night game too, like, we can explore with that. Get rid of the Thursday night game. I think everyone hates it. Put some games on Monday, put some on Tuesday, whatever. Get rid of Thursday night, move them up in the week. I think it's a win for everyone. The players are going to get more rest. You don't have that short week on a Thursday. Owners are going to be happy because people are still watching football on Monday night or Tuesday night, whenever you want to have it. But we got to get rid of the Thursday night, make it a two Monday night football games, or maybe even a Tuesday night football game.
I'm very much here for that. There's just something about it not being 5 o'clock yet and you have live sports on the TV. And I do think, you know, Mel, you start that argument with, hey, this is just for our entertainment, which is very important. But then you finish it with, it's better for scheduling purposes for the NFL players. So I hope it's a conversation that comes up because, Thursday night football, I don't know. It just always seems like quadruple A football. Like, the guys in the minors in baseball that are really good triple A players but can never make it over the hump to the big leagues. It's just that's what it always feels like, and I don't know. It's just not doing it. All right, number four for me. I'm starting to get a little worried about Joe Burrow, guys, and it's nothing to do with him as a player because he has been quite impressive for what he's got, what the hand he's been dealt as a rookie. Joe Burrow is going to be a good quarterback in this league for a long time if the Cincinnati Bengals can start protecting him. You just can't go out there every single week for this long and take the kind of hits he's taking. And it's not his fault, right? It's not like he's holding on to the ball forever and just getting kill shots. They cannot pass protect for this guy. And I think what you're seeing in Miami, and Miami had a really good weekend, but before this, fans were not happy down there. They wanted it to be two a time. I think it's calculated in Miami. I really do. I think the reason Fitz has been out there so long is, you know, and Fitz will have his weeks of Hall of Fame play and his weeks of I should not be in the NFL play, and then you get everything in between somewhere. It's just the Fitz roller coaster. But I think they knew their offensive line was in a transition year and they don't want to rush Tua out there. While the Bengals aren't afforded that luxury, I don't know if it's something they can do with their personnel. Maybe you have to go, you know, unfortunately, with some 12 personnel and keep some tight ends in to block even more. I don't know what the answer is because the line is just so poor on paper. But Joe Burrow cannot take the shots that he is taking in a season where, let's be real, the Bengals are not even close to contending in that great division.
No, and like, they need Penny Sewell. Like, that's all I can think about when I watch the Bengals play.
It's perfect,
like,
for
gosh,
that.
You guys
kick
need
Jonah
this.
Williams inside where he probably should have played.
Probably so, yeah. And solidify that offensive line. My last thing that I want to talk about today, Kevin Stefanski is the coach of the year. The Browns are 4-1. That offense is playing very, very well lately. They beat the Colts on Sunday. They beat the Cowboys the week before that. Now, they do play the Steelers this weekend. So that my argument could fall apart like almost immediately. But I think Kevin Stefanski right now, having the Browns at 4-1, the last time they were 4-1, Bill Belichick was the head coach. And Nick Saban was the defensive coordinator, which, mind you, they had those guys and fired them. So right. The fact that the Browns are 4-1, there are a lot of stories in the NFL right now, and it feels like daily we're talking about COVID and schedule changes. the Browns being 4-1, they have the same record as the Baltimore Ravens. Depending on what happens with the Steelers, they could be next week. Excuse me, the Browns could be number one in the AFC North. Like, this is a very, very good team, and we're finally seeing the talent come together where Baker doesn't have to win games. They're running the ball, they're playing good defense, and they're utilizing all those weapons that they had stockpiled.
Yeah, Stefanski's done one hell of a job, and I previewed it a little bit too soon, but I'm very excited for that Steelers-Browns game to kind of figure out who these teams are. Steelers are sitting there. They look very good. They've beat up on some lesser opponents, I think, but even the Browns came out, lost week one against the Ravens, and it looked bad, and it has looked very good ever since. So hats off to Kevin Stefanski. I do think that he's been an excellent hire in probably, you know, a couple weeks through the season. Yeah, I think that it's safe to say that he's probably the coach of the year so far. My last takeaway, I'll keep it in the NFL. Guys, I hate how much I love the Raiders. Like, I love their uniforms. I'm kind of coming even around on John Gruden, who I've been a little bit hard on. I'm okay with, like, Derek Carr, but I love Josh Jacobs. Alec Ingold, the fullback. He's on the field all the time, and I love watching him play. Our guy, Foster Moreau, Darren Waller. There are so many good pieces to this team that even watching them beat the Chiefs on Sunday wasn't that upsetting to me. I don't know what that says about me as a fan, but this is a really good team that I think is headed in the right direction. Obviously, getting a win in Arrowhead is not something that you love to see if you're a Chiefs fan, but these guys are hard to root against. Henry Ruggs, Brian Edwards, a lot of great pieces there. So for me, my last takeaway, like I said, I hate how much I love the Raiders.
Henry Ruggs.
Fun to watch. I know. They're fun to watch. They're a lot better than I thought they would be. I'll go out and say it right now. They could not win a game the rest of the year. That win against the Chiefs was something that I did not see coming. And the Raiders, you know, are a good model for a lot of teams, is that when you build up your offensive line like they have, they're going to have their questions on defense the rest of the year because they're young, and that's going to naturally happen. But offensively, I mean, one of the best young running backs in football, one of the best offensive lines in football, one of the deepest wide receiver groups, I think, or I know they've been banged up, but I would count Waller in that wide receiver group. He's that kind of target. So hats off to the Raiders. I mean, hell of a win and hell of a start for them so far. My last one here, I'm going back to college football, more for the draft. I think it's time to talk about it, guys. You know, we don't do this often. Travis Etienne is probably a round one worthy running back. And I know that's dangerous to say. A lot of teams cannot afford to draft a running back in round one. I fully agree. A lot of teams cannot pull a New York Giants and take a guy at two during a rebuild and say, hey, this guy's going to fix all of our problems. That doesn't work. But if you're a team similar to the Chiefs where you have a lot of pieces in place, but you need someone in the backfield that can be a receiver, that is really good yards after contact, that has breakaway speed, I look at Travis Etienne and say somebody at the back end, look at like a Seattle, well, they have their pick to the Jets, but that's a good example of a team that can look at Etienne and go, man, this guy's a game changer. I mean, he's got 4.3 speed. He's phenomenal after contact. He's gotten so much better catching the ball. He runs hard, great acceleration. I know Najee Harris is right at the top of this running back class as well with him. But man, when I look at Travis Etienne, I just think he's going to be such a difference maker at the next level on a good team or even a decent team that it wouldn't shock me when we get to picks 25 to 32. Somebody starts to think about it.
Yeah, man, he is explosive. Like, maybe this is unfair. I get big Jamal Charles vibes watching Travis Etienne. And if he can get in the right system where he can just go run, it's going to be beautiful. All right, let's take a break, and then we'll get some draft on draft. We got a couple draft on draft questions for you guys to close out the show today. Let's start here. Connor, this question's for us, buddy. Matt Columbia asked, what would a Sam Darnold to 49ers trade look like? I think it's almost impossible. Jimmy Garoppolo is, I believe he's now the 10th highest paid quarterback after some of the new deals that got done this offseason. And there's an out, I think, after next year. It's not this coming year. It's next year. So Darnold, while inexpensive, you have to start thinking about that fifth-year option. So what does Sam Darnold command in a trade? I don't think it'll be a first-round pick. I think you probably start the conversation with a two, or if that team is selecting early, it's probably a three. but I just can't. I can't see John Lynch sending a first round pick for Sam Darnold and basically admitting what we all know by now, and that's that Jimmy Garoppolo has some issues that have to be covered up.
I mean, without a doubt, number one, right? It's hard to execute because the money they gave Jimmy and the structure of Sam kind of sets you up where, you know, this is something that loses Sam's value, right? Is that Sam is not going to be on this rookie structure for much longer while, you know, obviously not being a sure thing. He's had his own struggles with or without Adam Gase. Sam is, you know, still making rookie mistakes. And I think when you look at it, the fit is perfect, right? Like when you look at what Kyle likes to do with Nick Mullins, when Nick Mullins has to play, a lot of cutting the field in half, a lot of, I don't want to say simple reads, but easier things that get him on the move. You know, Sam can do that. Sam is like the buffed up version of that, where you can really use his athleticism and ability to throw on the run to make things happen, where I think Sam would be very good with Shanahan. But I'm with you, Matt. It's not a first round pick. A lot of people won't like to hear this, but I think, you know, we're going to see how he finishes the season when he comes back from the shoulder injury. You're probably looking at a second round pick, you know, straight up a second round pick, or maybe a 3 and a 5 if, like you said, the 3 is early. I don't think the trade value for Darnold is going to be overwhelmingly good. You have to wonder what the market will be, right? Will the Steelers get involved? Will the Niners get involved? Will the Saints get involved? Will multiple teams get involved that you sit there and go, okay, we're not doing this for less than a 2? Then you have a chance. But if everybody knows the Jets are taking a quarterback and they're moving Sam no matter what, you might have teams get a little stingy and try to go, hey, a 3 and a 5, you know, 2 4s, something weird like that.
Yeah, I think that's probably what we'll see. I think obviously the Jets are in prime position to be drafting number one and probably getting a guy like Trevor Lawrence at quarterback. And when that happens, I do think a lot of teams are going to come at the Jets and say, hey, we'll give you a 3 for Sam Darnold. But kind of like you were saying, there are a lot of teams that could be in the market. The Bears, the Saints, the Niners, the Steelers. And I think that's what's going to help drive up the cost for the Jets, is that they can say, hey, we got a 3 on the table. You got to beat it with a 2. And so maybe you get, like you were saying, a 3 and a 5, or maybe you can get somebody to come up and give you a 2. I don't know if it's going to be the 49ers. I know that that would be a good fit. But Matt, like you were saying, there's still a lot of money tied up at that one position. I think you almost have to find a way to get rid of Jimmy Garoppolo's contract. And you know, honestly, Matt, as your brother, I think a lot of 49er fans probably owe you an apology for this season, saying this
right.
Dude was going to be shit and them coming at you. I didn't see anybody do it on Sunday, though. So it's going to be tough to get rid of that contract. And I don't know what their plan is for next week. Are they going to start Mullins? Are they going to start Beathard? Is it Garoppolo? I don't know what's going on there in San Francisco. But I do think that the market for Sam Darnold is going to heat up to where you can probably get a 2 for that guy.
No apologies were sent. I can tell you that. No, not one. So
Matt, here's a question for you. If, say, they're just done with Jimmy for the year, right? Would you trade a 2 and a 5 right now for Sam?
Oh, I would. Yeah, I would. Okay. I'm also like,
get that early look at him.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I love what he would be in this offense, because like the things that Sam's not great at, right? Like, we're not pushing the ball. He's not a Bruce Arians quarterback, right? But he is good at timing. He's good at rhythm. And you can move the pocket with him. Like, I just think there's so many things that you could do that would work with Sam. And, like, there's other players. It's not just Sam Darnold. Like, there are other quarterbacks where it's like, oh, man, would love to have that right now. But, yeah, so it's one of those things, like, where you don't like to be right about it, but you like to be right about it, you know? So let's move on. Micah McDonald, with LSU DBs notoriously having a great second year playing and a letdown third year, would it have been better for Stingley Jr. to sit out this year so his second year of playing was his third year? This is deep, buddy.
This is big brain.
Good Lord. So I think that's more like we're thinking about Grant Delpit. And not necessarily, like, I don't think that it was that way for Jamal Adams. I don't think it was that way for Christian Fulton.
Patrick Peterson.
Yeah, like, I think that's a great Delpit thing.
Mo Claiborne.
Now, with Stingley, like, he's great, right? We all love the potential there. He still has to play. Like, he's not a surefire top 5 pick in 2022 right now. Like, he still has to play. And so should he have sat out this year? I don't know, man. I mean, it's tough. He's a corner. You know, like, you need to play.
And he's a sophomore, too. And I think that that's where it's hard for him because he was an All-American as a freshman. Looked like one of the best corners in the league, or sorry, in the nation as a freshman. And, you know, so far this year, I know that he missed a game or two, was a little bit sick. I haven't loved the effort so far, and I don't know what he had going on. So hopefully we can see him kind of rebound this year because he hasn't been off to a great start so far this season. As far as, like, sitting out goes, you couldn't do it this year. Even if you opt out and you come back next year, like, what's that do for you? I don't know that that's much. And you can't sit out for two straight years. But I'm telling you, I would not be surprised if we see this guy opt out. If he's the first of his kind to opt out of a junior year and say, hey, there's no, hopefully, there's no COVID or anything like that. I'm just sitting out so I don't get hurt. I would not be surprised at all if we see that happening. I think the wheels might fall off that LSU wagon pretty soon if they don't find a way to recover, starting with two losses so far this season. It's something to definitely keep an eye on, though, with Derek Stingley. I think if anybody is going to do it, it could be him.
Yeah, I think so too, and I think it would cost them a lot of money. I think really the only guy, you know, in a normal year, not a COVID year, like this is not a, not like Micah Parsons is going to be fine, Caleb Farley, like that's totally different. In a normal year, the only guy I could really think of recently that would be able to do that is like a Trevor Lawrence, right? Like scouts knew what he was after 2 years, after 1 year. Scouts are looking at him and like, all right, he's probably gonna be the number one pick in his class. And then after last year, like a little bit of a slow start, but with the way he finished, it's like, all right, he's exactly who we thought he was. This year, he's like full robot mode where he doesn't miss anything. And now he's playing with like a little edge, a little attitude for the first time. He's like talking shit. It's like, this guy is literally a dream quarterback, but it's tough, right? Like you said, you got to play football at some point. And I don't think Stingley's been good enough where he's afforded the luxury of not playing next year. I think he had a really good freshman year. Sure, he got beat by some top guys, you know, Alabama or Van Jefferson. But overall, incredible freshman year. This year, I mean, it's a lot of football left to be played. But if this is the trajectory that him and that LSU defense, more importantly, are on, you got to go out and ball out next year. There's just no other way to do it.
Last question from our guy, Richie Bradshaw. Whose growth from college to the NFL has been more dramatic in a good way, Patrick Mahomes or Lamar Jackson? So I'm like keying on the word growth, and I think it's Lamar Jackson. Patrick Mahomes is better, a lot better. But I think Lamar Jackson's growth as a passer has been bigger. With Mahomes, we're seeing a lot of the same things in the NFL that we did in college. But I mean, this is close because I think with Patrick, what we're seeing is like the game is just so slow for him and his field vision. He has the craziest field vision I've ever seen for a quarterback where Melo, you tweeted out a video. It's like people are saying this is one of the greatest throws ever, but he does this so often that you're just accustomed to it. So maybe we're forgetting some of the splendor there. But I think with Lamar Jackson, there's still room for growth there as a passer. But I'm excited by what he has been. I mean, I had him low in that quarterback class. He was QB5 for me. And because it was, man, there are times where he has to throw outside the hashes in college and it just was not there. Like he wasn't accurate. And I think we saw, especially last year, being able to get the ball down, being able to hit people in stride. He also has very good field vision. I think Jackson's growth has been, it's been something that like he should be very, very proud of.
See, I'm going to go opposite direction. I think that Patrick Mahomes' growth has been exceptional. I think that he came in as a very raw prospect. I think it was even last year, maybe even with Lefko, that he was saying like, I didn't know how to read defenses. Like his first year starting, throwing for 5,000 yards, and he has no idea what the defense is doing. So I think that we've really only scratched the surface with Patrick Mahomes. And I think that there's still some very bright days ahead of him, obviously. But his growth, like I said, physically, like I don't know that it's changed that much. I know that he works his ass off, but I think the mental growth that you don't really see, that you can't put a number to. It's not like a bench press where he goes from benching 225 10 times to 20 times, but the mental growth and to learn the game with guys like Bieniemy and Eric and Andy Reid in his ear, I think we've seen a lot of growth there. And with Lamar Jackson, like, not to talk shit on the guy, but I still think he's trying to win the games with his athletic ability. And that's good. It works in the NFL for a little bit, but I even think we're seeing this year, he's going to have to start doing it where he is reading defenses a little better. He's doing it with his mind, and he's still able to run and create plays, but the product has not been as good this year as it was last year, that's for sure.
It's a tough one, right? Like for me, I was much higher on Lamar Jackson in that class than I was on Mahomes in his class. And Mahomes, for me, like, I just flat out missed on him. But besides that, like, the arm talent is the same, right? He's the guy that can make any throw in college that was jaw-dropping. I think maybe some of it is how well he's taken to learning under Andy Reid and how hard he works in general and all of those things where, yeah, like you said, the mental side of the game for Mahomes and the ability of how fast he processes things combined with his talent, it has come such a long way because they're both like backyard quarterbacks in college and what they could do with their legs, how they both throw the ball down the field, how they scramble to extend and keep their eyes down the field. But now Mahomes is just in complete control. And I think on the Lamar side, the growth aspect is what you said, Matt, just the accuracy issues on the intermediate part of the field. Sure, it's not perfect right now, but it's gotten so much better at the pro level. In college, the guy was always phenomenal at throwing the ball down the field effortlessly. But now in the NFL level, you're seeing the intermediate stuff really grow. So I think it's a little bit of a different answer for each of them. And it would be interesting if you threw Josh Allen into this equation.
Yeah, that's the answer for me.
He's completely reinvented himself. The guy at Wyoming really had no understanding of the game from a mental aspect and consistently tried to do too much to elevate that Wyoming program. And now in Buffalo, everything's slowed down for him where the accuracy is great. He's doing less of the chaotic stuff. And I think it's exciting to see all three of these guys really take off. And I think it speaks to all of their coaches and their work ethic combined, because the raw talent for all three of them has always been top notch.
Yeah, it's fun. There's so many good young quarterbacks in the NFL right now.
It's crazy with the three guys that you mentioned, even though, Connor, because like Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, they were all three big project guys. Like, oh, these are really good athletes.
They have plenty of doubters.
Yeah, with arm talent, I was low on all three of them. But they were huge project guys, and I think, respectively, they're each the best out of those classes.
And flip side, Darnold and Rosen, and those were like, they're NFL ready. Yeah, Daniel
sure
Jones,
sure
NFL
things.
Ready, not a project, you know?
Absolutely.
And it's like, the projects are pretty fucking good.
Yeah.
Right?
It worked.
Yeah.
Sorry, Bears fans.
Yeah, right? Now let's all get
and
crazy.
We're going to find that with Justin Herbert and Drew Locke are the next examples, right? And, you know, Locke taken in the second round, so a little bit more extreme. But we're going to see it with Herbert. And, you know, and Daniel Jones will be interesting, too, because I was more vocal than anyone. I thought he was extremely overdrafted, and I know you guys felt the same way, and it's not gone well. There's still time, but there's so many, you know, there's so much contrast. There's so many different examples of it working, but there's a lot of examples of it failing, too.
Yep. So, yeah. Hell yeah. But it is. It's going to be fun to watch and see where these guys go. That's our show. We'll be back Friday morning with more of your favorite football stuff. So, for Mello, for Connor, it's Matt. Talk to you guys real soon.